Well, howdy, Brevin. How we doing this fine, warm, hot evening? How are you doing, Brevin?
We're doing good.
Jesus.
You never fail to surprise me with what voices you can come up with.
Okay, that's like one of the three, so don't get too
so
excited.
Every single time, I'm surprised. How are you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing well, Brevin. How are you?
Doing good.
Sorry. I guess I should have said how I was and then asked you how you were, not just done what I just did right now.
Just don't even think about it.
Welcome to Red Dead Reflection. I'm Tyler, as Brevin mentioned, and this is Brevin,
and I'm Brevin. Jesus.
And this is the podcast where Brevin and I play through Red Dead Redemption 1 and talk about it as we go. Spoilers for Red Dead 1 and 2. This time, Brevin, we played up to For Purely Scientific Reasons. So,
yes, that is the name of the mission. It's not like we played up to For Purely Scientific Reasons, you know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean. Please explain.
Like the continuation of a sentence.
We played up to For... I don't think that makes grammatical sense, though.
I think you need to add something to the end for it to make grammatical sense.
What you're missing is...
Oh, the middle part.
We played up to the part where Bonnie...
Something.
For Purely Scientific... Yeah.
Okay, or it doesn't have to be that in depth. It could just be anything.
All right, Brevin. Let's get started. This is our first week back with our formal setup. We took a break and then had a mailbag episode and got some great, great emails to read last time. And we have some more this time. Not
Fantastic.
Nearly as many because we cleared out the main glut of it. But we're going to get started with some emails, Brevin, and then we'll move on to the missions. How about that?
Let's do it.
Or, you know what? Never mind. Did we actually talk about how we're doing... How are you doing?
Yeah, we did. I think we did.
How are you doing, right? We said we're doing well, but we didn't say anything about what we've been doing, I guess.
All right, so, like, personally, like, all right, so, newest thing that me and Tyler just started together is we started working out again. And I can tell you straight away that, like, yesterday we worked out, and last night I got the best night of sleep I think I have gotten in, I don't even know how long, like, a couple weeks. Like, full straight 8 hours, no waking up in between.
I'm very happy for your sleep schedule. That's awesome.
You're like, I can't relate, but I'm very happy for you.
No, I mean, I think I had a similar experience, but I have been sleeping better lately anyway, just because I'm going to bed at a more reasonable time.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't notice the difference. But yeah, I bet you that did help. I'm a little shocked that you would be so bold as to mention that we're going to the gym on the podcast, because now I feel... like I need to do it more, you know. Like
that's a good thing, isn't it? I mean, come on,
who you're talking to, Brevin.
It's not like we haven't done this before. So before COVID happened and all the gyms shut down, we had a really nice schedule of going to the gym 3 days a week for like we did this for what like 2.5 months.
We definitely broke through the New Year resolution, you know, window. Like we started in really early January.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved it. Like I had never seen such improvements in my body, like, because I've never gone to the gym before. And then of course COVID happened and ruined it all. So all that progress is gone. So now, you know, we're back to the old grind again.
Of course, COVID has ruined far more than just Brevin and I's gym schedule. And
yeah, that
not trying to make it about ourselves.
Thank you for saving me on that.
Gotta love podcasting, huh?
I'm being very selfish. How are you doing, Tyler?
You're not being selfish, by the way. I was just making mostly a joke. I'm great.
You were mostly.
I'm doing well professionally. I didn't hear back from that volunteer thing, so I guess
need
to try something else.
You gotta fill out your resume better.
I don't know. Like, well, yeah, exactly. Like, you can't take me. I don't know, but... it's sort of like you're familiar with the job application process where like you work some energy to write a resume and maybe two cover letters, then you're just like done for weeks because it's just so cognitively draining. I think it's sort of like that where like I need to amp myself up again to look at volunteering because it should be easier than it is. Maybe that's what I should do, is make a way to make it easier. But
do you mean it should be like easier mentally or like easier like physically? Like I should have to press less buttons to be able to get this application through?
Both. I think that, you know, convenience is what really sells things. That's why like Apple Pay probably has so many transactions, because I can just press my home button and then buy whatever terrible thing that I don't need. So, like, if we could find a way to get people as soon as they're like, hey, you know what, I want to help out a little bit, and then immediately after that, they are volunteered for something, like, that is how we could maximize.
You know what we should do? Why don't we have Apple listen to us talk, which I don't know if they already do, but let's have them listen to us talk, and when we mention that we want to volunteer, we just have to double-click the home button. And there we go, like, we're there.
Oh, don't even...
It's so easy, Tyler. This is what happens when you want easiness.
First of all, Apple has zero monetary incentive to do that, so they don't care, right? They do not care about the greater good. I'm going to go out and say that. Which is, they're a business, so it's not their responsibility. Yeah, Fair enough.
Exactly.
Have you been keeping up with the antitrust investigations and, like, the interviews with all of the...
Is that with... Oh, man. Is that Tim with, like, Cook? I remember the airlines. That's all I remember was with the airlines.
Oh, no, this was very recently. This was...
Oh, okay.
They
Does that have anything to do with it when I'm mentioning airlines, or I just sound like an idiot?
Well, I think there was probably an antitrust thing with an airline a while ago.
Okay, just want to make sure. I probably still sound like an idiot, but it's fine.
No, it's fine. I don't... I feel like I keep just enough up with the news to, like, hold a very...
to be able to start a conversation.
Yeah, to start... Not even finish a conversation. But yeah, it's just the corporate overlords, man. I don't know. It's a lot. I'm reading it. I'm onto a new book. I'm reading 4-Hour Work Week. I think I mentioned it earlier.
Yep.
It's by some guy who is... It's all about breaking away from, like, the standard lifestyle model that is so entrenched in America. That is work 9 to 5 from ages 20 to 65. And then... Mm-hmm. Retire and live in a little village in Florida or whatever it is people do when they retire. Probably not even that anymore. Who knows? But he was basically saying it's basically about, like, breaking down what you actually want to do with your time and then calculating how expensive that is and then figuring out what you can do to make enough money to pay for that lifestyle and then doing the least amount of effort possible to make that much money. So, yeah.
I get it, though. Like, I totally understand that, but that's such an interesting way to look at life.
Yeah, I appreciate, because a lot of what they talk about is, like, I can't think of what it, like, mini retirements, I guess, where, like, mm-hmm. rather than spending all of your income and wealth at the end of your life when you're withering and dying, spend, like, so much periodically as you age so that you can actually enjoy your money and everything.
Yeah.
Or, like, you can even just live in a foreign country for a year, theoretically, and not have that cost that much if you find some way to negotiate that. But yeah, it's really funny because it talks so much about, like, traveling and, like, oh yeah, I'm writing this from Japan and I just won, like, a black belt championship or whatever. And it's like, I can't. Don't talk to me about Japan right now, Mr. Author Man. I need to sit in my house all day and can't go nowhere. So it might not be the best.
Not written for COVID.
No, I will say, interestingly, it was written shortly after, or at least this updated version was, like, edited after the 2008 financial crisis. So it's talking about how, like, you know, even though things are bad right now, you can still manage to do things while the economy's down. Harley Davidson started in the Great Depression, blah blah blah. And now that's, like, also relevant again.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's super relevant.
The GDP contracted 32%. That's the latest news. That is insane, man.
That's a lot of letters and numbers. You just
but let's not talk about it, Brevin, because this is a podcast about Red Dead Reflection. Thomas writes in, Brevin.
Thomas
says, Brevin said that his opinion was that Master Chief wasn't as good a character as he could have been because he wasn't fleshed out enough. Well, if you watch the videos on the Halo 2 exclusive edition, excuse me, sir, I am reading Thomas's email. If you watch the videos on the Halo 2 exclusive edition, you would know Bungie created him that way for a reason. They made him that way so the player had more ways of retreating him. Of relating to him. He is supposed to be somewhat of an enigma. All right, now you may rebuke.
Now I may rebut.
I don't know what the...
So I know what you're talking about when you say that. I think probably on Reddit, I've read threads talking about, you know, why is Master Chief the way he is and, like, why haven't we seen his face? And I understand, you know, like, they want you to... I don't like the term relate to him more. How does the fact that, like, he is, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Not anonymous. What did you use? An enigma?
An enigma. Thomas's word.
How does the fact that he is an enigma make him more relatable? I find that odd.
So they use this argument a lot for, like, non-speaking characters, silent protagonists, as they actually call it.
Yeah. like non-speaking.
Well, I guess there's mute characters like Claude in GTA 3, and there's also characters who don't have voice acting, like a Fallout, not Fallout 4 protagonist, but an actual good Fallout protagonist. So I can see in like the RPG sense, where like if you want the character to sound how you want them to sound, but this isn't that, because John actually has a voice.
And John is Master Chief, in case you don't know.
Yeah. What does he have a last name?
I don't know if it's probably in the books or something, but I don't think it's talked about in game. They call him John 117 usually, if like they refer to his like full.
It's interesting because like
code name.
Yeah, like military personnel are typically referred to by their last as their last name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Weird. But maybe John is speaking to the idea that he's supposed to be like not like you can place yourself in his shoes more easily, but he is the greatest character cross-section for the target audience of Halo, right?
Like, yeah, he's a strong,
yes,
deep-voiced man.
Yep.
Who kicks butt.
And that's exactly the kind of people who play Halo, man. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, maybe it's not who they are, but who they respect.
Who they aim to be.
Yeah, the kind of person that they aim to be. I just picture like all the little kids with the high pitched voices swearing at you and matchmaking.
Oh, yeah.
Like playing Halo. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it. I don't know, Brevin. I feel like if you're gonna make a video game, just make it an interesting character.
It's weird because I keep almost calling him John. It's Master Chief. Let's just call him that because not everyone knows who John is. Master Chief is, it's not like he's a boring character. I don't think he is, in my opinion. A lot of people argue, not a lot, but a few people I've seen argue that he's a boring character because, you know, you don't really know much about him in the sense, or like he's not monotone in the way he delivers things, but he doesn't show much emotion because, you know, he's a super soldier. And Halo 4, you know, did a lot to make him show emotion, which you can argue is a good or a bad thing. I don't know. It's like I like the way he is. I don't really have much complaints. I think he's a cool character. When he has his moments, they're cool. He has good one-liners. He's satisfying.
He's satisfying. You know what, Brevin? That reminds me. Have you watched Hamilton since last week?
Of course not. No.
Come on, Brevin.
You just gave me the credentials.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. We're not allowed to say that on record.
That's true.
That's not true. Whatever Brevin just said, I do not support that. I don't know what he's talking about. What credentials?
There's gonna be like, you just gave me the license to be able to do it. Like, you gave me a piece of paper that says, "Oh, you can watch Hamilton now."
Okay. Like the bench warmers, like, "I am 5 years old, guys."
Yeah, exactly.
Just to spite you, I'm just gonna make all of these Hamilton references that you're not gonna get. And although you might get it if you like U.S. history, because there's some intersection. But what I was going to say is, now I'm just thinking about how stupid it is. Master Chief is like Aaron Burr in that he's not very expressive or decisive. Although, I don't know. He's a man of actions and not words. This analogy doesn't make any sense. I take it back.
I'm glad you took it back.
Yeah. So, but still, I think you should watch it. Watch it in pieces. I think that's the better way to do it for your first time, because I watched the whole thing front to back the first time I watched it, and it was like a lot. Like, I was like, oh, this is still cool 2 hours into it, but I feel like
but I'm ready to be done.
Yeah, well, not even that, but like, I would probably appreciate this with a fresh look more than having watched 2 hours of it straight without.
Yeah
anyway, I think we've talked about Master Chief for a long time on this podcast. No more emails about Master Chief. How about that?
Nothing.
Brevin?
I don't want anything to do.
Canceled.
Arbiter, though.
Why don't we talk about the new Halo game? Have you seen that?
Oh, Halo Infinite. Oh, man. Oh,
I don't know how we almost didn't do that, but okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, there was an Xbox showcase reveal. Was that last week or the week before, honestly?
It was actually right after we recorded last week, I think. So it would have been like last Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they showcased a bunch of games, and I don't know. I thought the showcase was kind of lame. There were some cool things, but wasn't what they hyped it up to be. And what they showed in Halo Infinite didn't really show too much, in my opinion. Nothing that really wowed me. It just looked like a Halo game again, which, I mean, is a good thing.
Whoa. I had a totally different interpretation. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, that's fine. As soon as I saw your face, I've had a feeling that it was completely different. I don't know. It was cool in the sense of, like, oh, it looks like, you know, it looks like a Halo ring again. That was cool. It was nice to see, like, you know, the green grass, the nice big mountains, and, like, I like the idea of an open world Halo game. I think that's a nice way to move forward in the Halo series, because a lot of the missions in Halo 1 and even some of the, like, Halo 3 are really essentially, like, just big open maps that you can kind of explore. So it lends itself to it. But my only real complaint is I don't like some of the designs of, not designs, I should say, because the designs are pretty good. The coloring and the choice of where they put color on the armor of some of the enemies looks a little off, and I think that's could be changed. For example, like, I think the grunts look a little weird with, like, full orange bodysuits rather than, like, you know, a little bit of orange on them and, like, the gray armor that they usually have. If you look at, like, the previous Halo games.
Oh my gosh. Brevin, this is the most specific complaint I have ever heard about the Halo, like, launch. Like, that...
Well, so, you want to hear why I'm complaining about it?
Please, yes.
Because they touted this as a return to form for the Halo series in the sense of, like, design. Like, if you look at Master Chief's armor, basically looks like Halo 4 armor. The Halo 4 armor for Master Chief and Halo 3 armor had a baby together. And I love his armor. I think it's really good looking. And they kept talking about how, you know, this, we want to go back to the older art style. Like, just look at the Halo Infinite cover art. It's literally a carbon copy of Halo 1. And I'm not complaining because of that. I think it's cool. It's a nice throwback. But there's a few things that I didn't like that they chose to do, which was, like I said, the grunt. And I don't like how the brutes look at all. I think they look really weird. It's hard to judge the gunplay because I didn't play the game.
So,
and, like, I just watched it, but go ahead.
Okay, first of all, maybe this is because I haven't been keeping up with the news, but, like, I feel like this reveals so much about the game, this mm-hmm. segment. You don't think that it does? I mean, it's a straight gameplay display right after you, I guess, start the game, mm-hmm. and it's, like, shows that it's an open map, open world map, and you just go wherever you want to go to complete objectives on the map, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. What I took it from it, there was a little tiny split second part where it showed so the little waypoints that you can go to, those are essentially missions, and, like, they have a difficulty rating on them. So, like, when they hovered over them for a couple seconds, it literally would say, like, difficulty completed. It would show, like, the normal symbol. So, like, those are essentially mini missions in the open world. At least that's my interpretation of it.
So I hope that's what happens, because if it is just an open world where, like, you just fight these different pockets of enemies on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me a lot of what it looked like was the gameplay looked like Doom, which is weird.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know why. I mean,
it's because there was a lot going on. At least I'm sorry to keep cutting you off, but I'm like agreeing with you 100% when I say that. It totally, like, has a lot more action elements in the sense of, like, being able to, like, pull stuff towards you, you know what I mean, and then just throw it, which is not a Halo thing at all.
Oh, like the grappling hook.
But it's cool. Hook. Yeah, the grappling hook, yeah. Or, like, being able to throw fusion coils at people and, like, running up to people. I guess that is a Halo thing, but it just feels more, like, it feels more connected, like, when the player hits something, at least it looks like. Like, you know how in Doom, like, you have animations and stuff rather than, like, just a blank, like, melee animation.
Yeah, it's more dynamic, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, dynamic.
But what was so weird about this gameplay, I don't know if it's just, like, demos or something, but it looked like it should have been really hard, but he was basically just dancing around all the enemies, like, It looks like a performance and not someone playing a game.
I mean, it is a performance, though. That is what it is.
I know, but if that is the expectation for the player to, like, do well at the game, I'm not interested in that. That seems like, I don't know, that's, like, not my speed, it feels like, to be mm-hmm. weaving your way through enemies and, like, turning and, I don't know, it just... I just love the pacing of old Halo, where you're walking at like a slow speed and you're methodically like making your way through a map, and everything is designed and placed somewhere for a reason. And I feel like if you put Master Chief in just like a glut of open world enemies, where no matter what direction he walks in, there's going to be enemies placed and spawning different places, then it will just feel like pointless, I guess. Like, it won't, the progress won't feel nearly as impactful, and there's less opportunities for the cool set piece moments that Halo has. But yeah, no, then I thought agree. Maybe Halo just isn't for me anymore because I didn't play 4 or 5, and
that's, you know, probably true. As I that's how I feel about Halo. Halo's not for me anymore right now. 4 and 5 were not very, very good Halo games, in my opinion. They're good games, but I don't think they were good Halo games.
Did you watch the video I sent you about Halo? Do you watch anything that I send you, Brevin?
I do watch things, but I know what you're talking about. I didn't watch that one. Was it the ray gun one? Yeah.
I watch things. I did not watch that either.
I do.
So that, yeah, he was talking all about how one of the reasons, and his critiques about Halo were more about in the PvP space, where when you just give everyone a crazy mobility options like jetpacks and sprinting and all these different things, then it becomes less about positioning and like trying to get certain weapons on the map, and more about just twitch reaction shooting and things like that. And then how they had to like evolve to make every weapon a, oh, what's this, what do they call it, Brevin, where like the
balance?
The double of ray casting, is that what it is?
Oh, are you talking about
ray casting guns, where instead of a projectile, like
hit scan?
Is that what hit scan? About? Yeah, okay. Ray cast is the name of the guy. I'm stupid. But anyway, that's the synopsis of the video, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, this is smart. And then they released the game, and it was like, oh, so now it plays like Doom, and you're moving at like 15 mile. No, that's slow, right? 15 miles per hour.
15 is like sprinting and like real life human speed.
Real life. So Master Chief would be like 25 miles per hour, like darting throughout.
Yeah, no, that, you know what it is? When they reveal multiplayer, I will form an opinion on Halo right now, because right now I don't want to form an opinion. Because that's all I really care about, to be honest, at this point. I don't really care about the story in Halo. It's more about, I want, if I want a perfect Halo multiplayer, Get rid of sprinting, please, for like a competitive game.
Like, one thing,
for a game type.
No, I agree. Sorry. But one thing that was really weird for me is the interactions between Chief and the pilot character. It looked so much like GTA Online cutscenes that it made me want to vomit. It was like some zany character that's like, hey, look at, like, what are we doing? Ah, and then talking to another character who's just like grunting or not saying anything. And I was like, oh, man. Taking a play out of Rockstar's book there with their online.
Is this the start to Halo Online? Halo Infinite Online?
Oh, no, don't say
Have you
that.
Heard the rumors about, like, why it's called Halo Infinite?
No, I'm sure it's some, what is it? Tell me what it is.
So, people are, which it makes sense with the open world, that this is going to be, like, what are they called? Like a subscription-type model? Not subscription, but the sense of, like, games as a service. That's what people call it. And that this is going to be, like, the Halo game for next gen. Like, and they're just going to build off of it.
Cool.
Which makes sense, which is why it's called Infinite. It just infinitely gets better, right? It's filled with more microtransactions. I don't know. I'm just messing around.
Yeah, I do want to talk about, like, how bizarre of a choice it was to show the main bad guy, Brute, at the end for, like,
what
felt like 5 minutes of him giving a monologue.
Very odd choice to end an explosive trailer on, or what's supposed to be a hype trailer.
I mean, I sort of like how weird of a choice it is, but I don't know that it's smart business-wise, you know what
but
I mean?
But he doesn't,
like,
say anything interesting.
No, I think it is interesting. I think he's talking about how they're both these aging giants of power, basically, and like they're like in their retirement, their golden years, and they're not going to make it out alive or something, or one of them is going to.
But is that really interesting?
I think it's interesting in that it alludes to the end of Master Chief, who's been like a video game icon for so long.
Okay, I can see that.
But in a straight up, like, independent storytelling sense, no, it's not really that interesting, I guess. But yeah, I think we can talk about something else besides Halo now.
We'll see. Well, next time there's a release, we'll spend an hour talking about it on the podcast.
Thank you guys for tuning in to listen to us talk about anything but Red Dead Redemption, apparently.
Yep.
Thomas wrote another email that just said copyright and then all caps fan fiction, which is a reference to our discussion about whether or not you can use other characters that exist. Such, we were talking about Ready Player One.
Yep.
And basically, yeah, he's right about fan fiction, but I think with fan fiction...
Yeah, those aren't published works, right?
You can't publish it or make money off of it, otherwise you would get
sued. You don't go to the library and pick up fan fiction.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, like, actually, why is it always Halo? But I was thinking about, like, the Halo novels that were big for a while.
Yeah,
I don't know if they were really big, but I know that they had them.
I have them, so they must have been. My brother had them.
My older brother had them, too. Maybe it's an older brother thing. But, like, you couldn't just write a book about Master Chief and publish it and be like, this is my book. I don't think that would fly. All right, Brevin, moving right along.
I don't think that answers my question. Like, Ready Player One made references. It's different than writing a book about them.
I think Ready Player One, they would have had to have gotten permission to use the characters' likenesses in the movie.
Man, that's crazy with how many references there are in that.
But if you want to get conspiratorial, I think that that movie is one long commercial for different media products, because we're all fighting for mind share right now, right? So if I can show Optimus Prime in this movie for 5 minutes, that's going to get people thinking about Optimus Prime, and then they're going to buy Transformer action figures.
Makes perfect sense.
All I'm saying, man. All I'm saying.
All right, moving on.
Thank you so much for the emails, Thomas. Love it, as always. If you want to write in yourself, we messed that up again, Brevin. RedDeadCast@gmail.com. RedDeadCast@gmail.com. Unfortunately, due to recent circumstances, we will no longer be accepting emails related to Halo because we spend too much time talking about it. I hope you understand. Okay. Dave from the UK writes in.
Dave from the UK.
Tyler, sorry for the unclear email about enjoying this. Do you remember last time he sent an email that was just like, I'm enjoying this, and then no context?
Yes. Yeah.
He said, you and Brevin were going at Mexico, and he sort of said, are we being too harsh about Mexico? And then you said, is this enjoyable content to listen to? And finished it with, listeners, if you're enjoying, just send an email saying, Tyler, I am enjoying this. So I did. Sorry for the confusion on that one.
You followed it. You followed it perfectly.
Yeah, you followed our instructions, so I don't think you should apologize. I think that's our bad for just telling people to send in ambiguous emails. But I'm glad you enjoyed our tearing into Mexico. This will be the last episode we mention the Mexico segment of Red Dead Redemption.
Yes.
That's not necessarily true, but we'll see.
Even when we get to the end, we're never going to talk about it. We're going to skip over that part.
Okay, at this point, I'm questioning everything. Ooh. Hot take. At this point, I'm questioning everything I ever thought about old Johnny Boy's moral compass. You know who else was this ruthless and one-track-minded? Dutch.
Yep.
That's Dave's words about Mexico. And we will learn more about it very soon. Brevin, are you ready? And by soon, I mean immediately right now, unless you have anything to add.
I am ready.
Okay. So, we left off. We actually started to read this email last time, and then we were like, oh, wait, this is some stuff that we...
Yep.
Yeah, so we're going to continue, pick up where we left off. We left off with him talking about the DeSanta mission. So after a very... And this is Dave's email. So after a very short chat where DeSanta hints, that he may know where Javier and Bill are. As per usual, John runs off to kill some more people, only this time with a train. I wonder if Abigail would still be proud. Then you realize it's not just any people you're killing, but the rebels, the one whose leader you just saved and didn't have the highest opinion of. So many rebels, all caps, died in the making of this mission. I can't believe how many people get killed during the train journey. I make a habit not to kill horses, but this mission was not giving me that option. Can you imagine the cleanup, he said? Yeah, so this is it's one of the many train missions in Mexico. I don't remember which one.
Probably like five, it feels
but
like.
But it might have been one where you're... No, I don't even know. But there are many horses died, so yes. Dave's horse kill count is increasing. So he says he gave DeSanta over to the rebels. After all the bad things John had done to them, they deserved that at least. So now for the moment, he has finally come to get Javier Escuela. Okay, pause a little bit. He decides to give DeSanta over to the rebels as like a offering to the rebels, which is an interesting take, because I was just like, DeSanta bad, I kill now.
Well, I gave DeSanta to the rebels too.
You just didn't want to get involved.
Yeah, I was like, it's their beef. I'm just here to get Javier Escuela.
It sort of is the true telling, I think, because the way John acts all throughout Mexico, he wouldn't care to kill DeSanta. He apparently doesn't even, I mean, unless he cares about getting personal revenge for someone who lied to him about knowing where they were.
But does he care? Like, I feel like that's not in his character to be that worried about that.
Yeah. So I'm glad that I did it, because I actually got to enact my own sort of justice through John, which is not something you get to do in Mexico otherwise.
Did you, like, blow him up with dynamite or something?
No, I just shot him, but, you know.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. This wasn't what we played this week, by the way. Yeah. And I know it's confusing. Oh, man. It's been, like, a month since we last played, so it's going to be rough. Yeah, that's a long time. We'll get through it together, guys. Don't you worry. All right. So now the moment has finally come to get Javier Escuela. Now, before I read his email, let me just set this up a little bit. Dave played Red Dead 2 and then went back to play Red Dead 1. So now he has the context of Red Dead 2 along with a fresh playthrough of Red Dead 1 waiting for him. So he's playing through it from that perspective. And he says, finally, I'll get him. And there he is in the middle of pure chaos. But of course, Reyes has been captured and is beaten to a pulp. Okay. I'm doing a terrible job of reading through this email, but
I'm understanding it.
So you're understanding. Okay, I just want to say he's not actually right about to get Javier, but this is the mission in Chupa Rosa where you have to go save Reyes and like all of the rebels are fighting.
Yeah.
Wait, is this a mission that we played this week, Brevin? Now I'm losing.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
We played this mission last week.
Yes.
Last if it's episode.
Where you save Reyes? Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, that wasn't this week.
Not the one where, but here, I'll read the next part and all right, we'll see if we did it this week or not. Of course, Reyes has been captured and is being beaten to a pulp. Better go help him. Who's this chick running in to help us? Oh, it's Luisa. Oh, she's dead. Anyone in game going to acknowledge that? No? Okay.
hold on. We haven't talked about the mission
yet. So we haven't talked about the mission yet.
Yeah, that is definitely one this week. That moment confused me so much. Yeah. I was so confused. Well, because I was like, was that even Luisa? Because there's no one reacted to that, but it looked just like her. Or was that just some random person that just ran in to try and help us?
Because no one reacted. You're like, there's no way that can be Luisa, the mother of the revolution, who's been like a high... Yeah. No, it's just that, Brevin, it's just that nobody cares. No one cares about Luisa. I guess
so. Not even John. John doesn't even, like, flinch. He's like, that poor woman had to die. It's like, he didn't even... He makes fun of Reyes for not knowing who Luis is. It's like, he didn't even know who Luis is.
I think it's just that John is just so cold and distraught. I don't know if that's the word, even. Like...
He's so just disjointed from everything.
I think I messed up our email preparation because I forgot somehow that we need to talk about the missions before we can talk about them through his email. So,
whatever.
Well, hold on. I'll get back to that, but I want to read this email. Dave, don't worry. We'll get to it. I know Dave's sitting there tapping his feet. He's like, come on, guys.
He's going to fast forward now until he gets to that part.
Well, no, because I have another email he sent from him to read, so... This is a super interesting email, and ooh. I think you're going to love it, Brevin. So,
all right, let's hear it.
Are you ready? So John Marston and his personality change is what he's talking about in this email. What is something that could change a person completely? Not necessarily John Marston, but basically every person. I want you to answer that question, Brevin.
So what is something that could change a person completely? Yes. Just regarding anyone?
Yep. Something that would... be a complete change of character for an individual. Something that, by the way, happens in Hamilton. So if you had done your homework, we would have been able to talk about that as well, but you didn't, so here we are.
So is he talking about an event, or what is something that could change personally in a person, like personality-wise?
An event that would incense a change. That's not the word, but...
Incentivize?
Invoke.
I like incentivize.
Okay.
Go with that. We'll say that. Death is the first thing that came to my mind.
So if a person is killed, then they're very much different than they were.
That's completely different.
That's a great point, Brevin. Wow. All right. Okay.
That is not what I meant.
All right. What did you mean?
I meant death of, like, of someone that you're very close to. Like, say, like, your husband or your wife or your children.
The death of a child is the correct answer, Brevin.
Wow. Okay. So pretty close.
So my thinking, back to Dave's email, is the death of John's daughter is what led to the shift in personality, in John's personality and morality. Yeah, I can see the gears turn in your head, Brevin. Isn't this incredible?
Why wasn't this in the game?
I know. Well, it is. It is in the
game. I know, but like, why wasn't it alluded to more? Like, you have to think about it. It should just be like, bam, right? Maybe it's better that you don't. I don't know. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, this is just, I'm going to read the rest of Dave's email, so
yep.
Pull up your boots.
All right.
Here's a little story I have made to logicize this. Is that a word? If it is,
we're making it a word.
John and Abigail are set up on Beecher's Hope. Jack is adjusting to ranch life, and things seem to be going well. Then Abigail discovers she's fallen pregnant. He says gender identification tests didn't exist then, so she would have had to have... The daughter would have had to have been born to identify it. So we know that they know that it was a daughter that died, so that's why he's saying it would have had to have been born. They then spend time preparing for the arrival of a baby. John builds a crib and everything. He finally starts to believe in his redemption, that maybe he can be the man Abigail wants him to be. And then she is born, giving John the baby he 100% knows is his. Remember, he could still question Jack's parentage deep down. This is his daughter. Nobody else had Abigail this time.
I'm shaking my head right now.
So they spend a month or so, who knows, loving this little girl, only for her to get sick and die, I would assume. Imagine what that would do to John. All of the hope and future plans he had ripped away, his daughter taken from him. I think at this point, John may have developed a slightly what's-the-point attitude, coupled with a bitterness for what the world had taken. This could explain why John is so unresponsive to the events in Mexico, or why he is okay with all the killing. He just doesn't see the point in being good if the world is going to punish him anyway.
Yeah, that's the new canon. That's it.
Isn't it perfect? I mean, that fills in all the gaps for us.
Yeah, I like it. That's it. Put it in the books.
And it dovetails in with, I believe it was Russ's email last week talking about how, like, Tyler and Brevin, you guys don't have kids. Like, if you had a family, you would understand doing these things for your kids and your family. But it's like an extra layer on top of that, and that he had a family and lost a member of his family for no real reason, right? It's not like some, what do they call the agent? It's not like a Pinkerton agent walked in and killed his daughter. Like, no, it was just the cruel randomness of the world that took his daughter away right when he was on the upswing with the ranch and his son and wife.
And then that combined with actually getting your wife and your son taken would definitely make a man be the way John is.
Oh man, I mean, yeah, I didn't even think about that angle where it's like the daughter dies and then however long after, wife and son are forcibly taken by the government, like,
and you gotta go back to what you were doing before, killing people. So John's just John's basically just mentally destroyed at this point.
I mean, this sort of like now I think back to all the times where John is just wandering around Armadillo, like helping out a witch doctor or a charlatan. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. If you're just like, well, life is a joke and nothing good survives, and I'm just gonna die anyway, so let me just, you know, meander around and hang out with Seth. Like, man, that is so depressing. This is so depressing.
So Red Dead Redemption is actually a very sad game from this angle. You're playing a soulless, or a man filled with no happiness. Just meandering around the wasteland of the deserts.
Is that why? Is that why he has no moral conviction? Is because he's just, like, he's just dead inside?
Yeah. I mean, it explains it a little bit. I mean, does it give it? Is it Is it an excuse? I don't think so, but it explains it.
I mean, I talked about how John is basically like a nihilist, and like that seems to be the imparting lesson that Rockstar. So, okay, so in past episodes, I would talk about like what is Rockstar trying to say with this piece of media? And yeah, maybe it's not that this is the person that you should aspire to be and you want to see life this way, but this is what happens when someone lives for too long and their life is just beating them down over and over again.
That's depressing. When yeah, that's what happens when someone lives for too long. That is like, whew, you could frame those. There's a lot of meaning behind that.
Frame,
you could frame like the words, and like that's just so much meaning behind that. It's what happens when you live too long.
Like home sweet home, live laugh love.
Yeah, that's what but like the complete opposite. Long, like a depressing nice
cross stitch thing to hang on your wall.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Then check out our merch page for some very depressing wall art. I don't know, man. I love this. This has totally like reinvigorated my interest in the game, because I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. Now I understand John's character, and
that completely makes sense. I don't even have anything to dispute it. It's just, yeah, it's like you might as well have wrote the story, because he fixed it.
Man, but then I'm like, why even tell this story? Like, we keep doing the same thing where we go back and forth about, like, this isn't meant to be a character-driven experience. It's meant to be a simulation where you feel like a cowboy. And that,
yeah,
from that perspective, it makes sense to have a character who is just, like, beaten into the mud and just wants to find some semblance of self in this world.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wow. Okay, Brevin. Okay. I think you're right, Dave. And he also says, P.S., are you and Brevin Final Fantasy fans?
All right.
Bit of a left turn.
Yep. I like it, though. I like it. Yeah, I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. What have I played? Hold on. I'm trying to remember. I played 7 when I was pretty young. I played part of 8, but I couldn't finish it. I love 9. Just started 10 recently, but I didn't finish it. I love 10 too, which a lot of people have their thoughts about. If you know what Final Fantasy 10-2 is, you know what I mean. I love 12, and I love 13. And those are all the ones I've played.
You are way more of a Final Fantasy fan than I even realized. I'm very impressed.
I'm a very big Final Fantasy fan. I love JRPGs.
I think I played Final Fantasy 1 on, like, my PSP at some point. And, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's like, at this point, it's like the baseline JRPG, right?
Yeah, that is like the most basic possible Final Fantasy.
Yeah, like, yeah, you actually go and collect 4 crystals or something. But beyond that, no, I have not really played any Final Fantasy game. And I think, you know what? If you give me a Final Fantasy game on non-player contract, for example, not playing it.
Never do it. I would never give you that, because that's too much time commitment into one game.
I am happy knowing I will never play a Final Fantasy game in my entire life. I choose the time in its place.
Yeah, I completely understand that take. JRPGs are not for everyone at all, because they can be grindy. Luckily, the Steam releases, the re-releases of all the old Final Fantasies, they put things in to speed up the game, to make it so you can grind faster, so you don't have to sit there and, you know, spend 2 hours grinding. You can spend half an hour instead, or whatever it is. So you can get to the fun stuff.
Can I just say, like, I totally hate that. That I makes knew you me were gonna feel disgusting. Whenever I, like, modify the difficulty of a game to get past a boss, or, like, in like, L.A. Noire, you could just, like, skip action sequences if you kept dying. Mm-hmm. I could never. No. Never. No.
You wouldn't even speed up a game to make it just go by faster? Like, that's just saving you time. That's not making things easier.
If it's... I mean... It feels like it's just destroying the whole catered experience, though. Like, that grinding was there for a reason, such that when you did surpass the level required to do whatever it is you need to do, you feel satisfied, like you actually worked for it. But if you mm-hmm. just grind right away, then it just becomes like the Pokemon thing where you just blaze through every single challenge in the game, and there's no...
Yeah, so I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think that's up to the player to make that distinction of whether they want to ruin the game for themselves, as I would call it, and grind way too much. Because that's the thing with JRPGs. You could grind until you're level 100 and just play the entire game. That option is available to you, and you'd ruin the game, in my opinion, doing that. But that's not how the games are meant to be played. You're meant to get to a certain point. Usually, some of the older Final Fantasies, you do have to grind to make it through certain bosses, because they can be some really big difficulty leaps. But anything past, like, 10, you really don't have to grind unless you're doing side content. You just play the game normally, you'll be fine, usually.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's, like, the big division on something like Animal Crossing, where there's the time travelers and the non-time travelers. Mm-hmm. And I am strongly... You know what? Against... I don't know. I am principally against time travel, and that I would never do it myself.
Because and I for anyone who doesn't know what that is, what we're talking about in Animal Crossing is based on real time. So if you time travel, that means you set your time clock like forward, so you don't have to wait a real life day to do more things.
You change your system clock. You can make it Christmas Day tomorrow so that you can get the gifts and the Christmas themed furniture in July.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I feel like ruins part of the base integrity of the game and the reason why it even exists. I mean, but then I think I spend so much time just going on Animal Crossing and checking to see what's in the store, and nothing, like, you can, there's so many days where there's basically no new content to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes me think, well, if you want to time travel and just see what there is to see and then have that be your experience, then go for it, you know?
How about we just let the player decide what they want to do? As long as it's single player, do whatever you want.
I think we should stop getting video games that are created and just have everyone be indie developers where they only make their own video game so that it is exactly what they want every time.
Problem solved. Moving on.
Let's get into the missions, Brevin.
Is that it for emails?
So basically, we only had emails from Thomas and Dave, and we're going to get back to Dave's Mexico email, I think, as we progress through the missions, because he has some interesting takes and notes.
All right, so let's see. I'm trying to remember what this mission was about.
You off guard, huh? Gates of El Presidio.
Yeah, so this starts off pretty
raunchy.
Pretty raunchy. Yep. Hey. Wow, we have the exact same word. Yeah, it starts off with quite a mature scene going on.
Yeah, keep talking about it, please.
No, but I don't know, man. It caught me so off guard. I completely forgot that this was in the game.
Basically,
I don't know if it caught you off guard.
No, I remember the scene because it is interesting. yeah. Especially playing it when you're like 13 or whatever.
I feel like I would have remembered it back then. Like, it would have been like, what the hell? I'm playing a game with this in it.
I know. But you're just some fiend who
You were going to say that. You're going to set you up for that one.
The internet ruined you, Brevin. But anyway, this is a scene in which the leader of the rebellion, Abraham Reyes, is having relations with another peasant girl, woman. Jeez. And John basically walks in on them trying to excuse me, where's Javier Escuelos? Walking in on an intimate moment. And Reyes just like shoos the woman away, and John gets really mad. This is most anger and emotion we've seen in John the entire game, I think.
Yeah. Save
maybe going after Bonnie, I guess. I mean, that's like a tender moment, right?
Where, yeah, it's tied though, which is odd. I don't think it should be.
It is weird. So he's really upset about Abraham because he says you're supposed to marry Louisa, right? That's what he says, something along those lines.
Yep.
And yeah, so I wrote Abraham seems to be more upset about. John seems to be more upset about Abraham not coming to Louisa than he is about Allende raping women. And which is true. Isn't that true? Isn't that insane? Because Allende doesn't make any commitment. He probably is married. Who knows? But John sees less of an issue with that than he does with Reyes being wishy-washy with Louisa.
And this just makes the moment when Louisa dies make even less sense. What is going on?
So,
all right, go ahead.
Well, okay, before we move on to Louisa's death, which is in this mission or a couple missions from now?
Yeah, I think it's two missions ahead.
Like, I don't even think Reyes has demonstrated that much commitment to Louisa. He's never said, "I will marry you." Not that I remember. He's always playing the field such that he's like not saying that he won't marry her, but he's also not really.
He's like a womanizer. He's just like, he's just fiending.
Which is not a defensible position, I think.
No, it's not.
Totally transparent. But John, by watching him, should have expected that. Like, the player knows that Abraham isn't committed to Louisa at this point, right?
So why does he look like a man who's going to commit to a woman right now in the middle of a war?
Well, he theoretically could be, but he's not that person.
No, yeah, does he sound and act like a man who's going to?
No.
No, not even close. He's off the rails.
So, yeah, Reyes is just, I don't see the scene and say like, oh my gosh, like he is not committing to Louisa. But the fact that John is so distraught by this makes me think, am I crazy for expecting this? I mean, obviously we've played the game before, so maybe there's something to be said there. But yeah, like it's very obviously set up narratively that Louisa is interested in Reyes and he's not reciprocating. And this is sort of like the narrative that we have. So just to see John so upset, and maybe this does feed back into like the dead daughter thing, is like he values family and an intact family more than anything. So to see Reyes throw that away for whatever it is Reyes wants is like wounding to John.
I don't know, man. I don't buy it. It's just weird. It's just, I don't, because we haven't gotten on that mission yet, but like when Louisa dies, it completely derails any theory on like him caring about that. Maybe it's like a knee-jerk moment where he like, it's something just triggers in his mind.
By no means. I don't think John Marston cares about Louisa. I think I think that's the distinction. He does not care about Louisa, but he cares about the sanctity of marriage and commitment and like the honor that
But it's not like they're married.
I agree. But I can see the side that like if she believes that they will get married, then he has some obligation to either
make it
very clear that he is not interested or continue with that. I don't know. It's very telling that like John is not a man who is going to jump into every moral argument, and he really picks and chooses that.
Yeah, he's very picky. One thing too that I wrote, I think so he talks about how he loves like the peasant women, I'm pretty sure he refers to them as. He loves like, you know, talking to them, whatever. I think of Reyes as a peasant himself. Do you get that angle? Like he's not clean. He's always gross looking. Not that peasants are all like that, but you know what I mean. Like,
you know,
he doesn't come from like, I know that's terrible. But what I'm saying is like, he flaunts himself as being so much above everyone else, but I see him as just like at the same level. Like everyone's, you know, in this war, you know, fighting to the death, grimy.
That's interesting. I mean, in the realm of like the Mexico, this fictional Mexico establishment society, I think yes, Reyes is a peasant, according to, you know, certainly Allende would call him a peasant.
Yeah,
I don't know. It doesn't set him up as like the son of a rich family or like someone who's college educated or something, which are some distinctions that might elevate you above peasant status. But I think it's just he's like a megalomaniac who, because other peasants put him up. I mean, you know, all a society is what the collective belief is, right? So if all of these peasants think Reyes is the greatest thing that ever happened to Mexico, then he's not a peasant. He is the savior of the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he even, like, speaks of himself in, like, biblical terms of saving Mexico, and, like, after they win the war, he will be the king, or, you know, he's definitely not interested in, like,
he definitely says he'll be the next president. Democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so that's an interesting observation, but I think it is just, like, his own self-interest.
Mm-hmm. Do you like Reyes?
Oh, of course.
As a character?
Okay. Oh, as a character? You know what? I think I do like Reyes as a character, because he is a little, like, provocative, I guess. Like, he's not just... He's not a John Marston by any means. Although I guess John Marston is provocative in that he doesn't do things. But Reyes, at least whatever he's doing, he's like living it to the fullest, right?
Yeah. He kind of reminds me of like a Han Solo type personality, you know what I mean?
Wow. Oh, like the devilish rogue?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a better character than Han Solo because he's more complicated.
You really think so?
I'm throwing the gauntlet down. Write in if you think Han Solo is a better character than Abraham Reyes. RedDeadCast@gmail.com.
And next week we'll have our biggest email episode ever.
Do you really think it's that compelling?
I don't know. I think Han Solo is more interesting, but I think that's just because
he's got more screen time, man.
Yeah, he's got more screen time. I don't know if I have good arguments towards it.
Is he a better person? Yeah, I hope so, because Reyes is just terrible, but he's an interesting character. I think
he's probably I would argue he's probably one of the more interesting characters to come from the Mexico portion of the game,
particularly in Mexico, because I think what makes him interesting is it would have been very easy for Rockstar to set it up like, you know, the Mexican army general is bad, 100% bad, and the rebel guy is 100% good, and obviously life is more complicated than that, so it doesn't need to be this complicated, granted. Like, maybe he could just be, like, a average, not narcissistic, completely person that is helping out the rebellion. But, yes. And I think he says some excellent things. And I have some quotes I want to read off, Brevin.
Well, too.
He says, Javier was a cynic who wants to be a romantic. Whereas you, John, you are a romantic who wants to be a cynic.
That is so what poetry. Is cynic? What does that mean?
Cynic means you are basically down on everything and
So if you're being cynical, like then you're being unnecessarily down.
Yes. Whereas romantic, like you speak flowery language. Not necessarily, but like you believe in the greater good and that there's more good in the world than bad, I think, is basically what it comes down to. So I love the idea of Javier being a cynic who wants to be a romantic and John a romantic who wants to be a cynic, because that is sort of it. Like it reminds me of like the little kid who's like the sweetest kid at home. But then when he goes to school, he's like, I'm tough. Like,
yeah,
no bullies are going to mess with me. Like, I don't care. And then, you know, comes home and enjoys his lollipops and stuff. What a weird analogy that is.
I love it though.
That's my life story, actually. That's my, if you talk to people who I went to school with, they'll be like, oh yeah, he didn't care about any bullies.
And he ate lollipops.
That's not true. Yeah, so but you definitely do get this sense that like John walks, he talks a talk, but sometimes he's not as bristly and tough as you make him out to be, which you see in like the Bonnie scenes where she sort of well, I was going to say undresses him. I mean, I guess, yeah, but like, you know, metaphorically.
Yes.
Yeah. So another interesting thing John says is that the ending of the gang hurt Javier more than most. How do you feel about that?
Whoa, that's okay. I remember that, but I don't remember hearing the most or than most. That's odd. What does that mean?
I mean,
I don't understand that. Or so maybe it's because I don't understand it because it was never, you know, expanded upon.
I mean, if you think about it, like, John... Arthur was dying anyway, right? Mm-hmm. John has a family to go to. Charles wasn't really that close with the gang. Like, who identifies most with the gang out of everyone? Bill Williamson, but he probably has a lower capacity for emotion than Javier, yep, just because he's so simple. And Javier, right? Like, they are the two core members in, like, the ground. What am I trying to say? Like the rank and file, basically. So I can see how, like, to Javier, like you take Javier out of the gang and what's left?
Yeah, what is Javier?
We don't know. He's a guy you find in a broom closet.
Yeah.
Running away from you, like throwing crates at you. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's what he turns out to be. Sounds like, sounds so weird when you put it that way. I had no idea where you were going with that when you said a broom closet.
I think actually Dave refers to it as a broom closet, which is why I said that. But anyway, let's move on. One thing that he does say is John says, "I ain't here for revenge," which I just think sums up this notion that he doesn't really care about hunting down Javier or Bill. He's mm-hmm. just in it to get his family back.
Yep. He definitely seems to say that more, prove that point more, I think, in these missions, that it's not personal at all.
Yes. All right, so Brevin, what's next?
We're gonna break into El Presidio.
Okay, it's finally like the grand siege of the, it's not Chuparosa, it's the other one.
El Presidio, that's what it's called.
Escalera is the name of the city that it's in. Wait, is El Presidio is this the one with the cannons outside?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, never mind.
It's the one where you use suicide horses, which is just brutal.
What do you mean? Oh, you load up the carriage with TNT?
And then you run the horses into the door. I was like, what? You can't just do that. At least let the horses free or something.
Honestly.
Why can't they just roll up the thing and then let the horses go and then blow it up? That would have been perfectly fine.
I did not even think about... I'm so desensitized to horse death at this point from Red Dead. God. I didn't think about it, I'll be honest.
I hate killing horses. Every time I do it, I shudder.
I know. I'm sorry, Brevin.
But yeah, we're going to go take out... we're going to take down the fort and we're going to catch Javier. That's what this mission's really about.
That's right. So, yes, because Javier and Bill aren't actually together at this point. But they're both with the Mexican army for some
reason. I don't know.
Why?
I don't understand why.
Hold
on. Let's talk about this more when we get to where you killed, when you find Bill. Let's leave it for that because I was so confused.
Okay. So, all right. So you clear out the fort. It's actually a pretty hard mission because you need to move your way through the fort to clear out different locations where Javier might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but like the army people keep spawning from what I noticed.
Oh, like it was infinitely spawning until you get to a certain point.
Yeah. So
those are the worst. I hate games like that.
Monster closets. Yeah.
is that what that term is?
You never That's heard hilarious. That?
I've never heard that before. I like that.
They refer to that a lot in like the Call of Duty.
COD 4 is the game that was known for the most with unlimited enemies.
The final mission on the plane where like people would just spawn.
Oh, yeah,
all over
yeah.
the place, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call it, is a monster closet, where it just, like, monsters, quote-unquote, or just enemies.
That's funny. I like that.
Spawning. Anyway, I remembered that Javier is only in one location, but for some reason I didn't just go straight there. Like, I went to check the other locations. I don't mm-hmm. know why, but...
Don't you get, like, 3 question marks on the map, and you have to check them?
Yes. But I think if you just go to the one where he's at... he'll just be there. Like, it's not one of the things
I didn't even realize.
Third location.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not, don't quote me on that. But yeah, remember we played these missions a long time ago.
Yes.
So finally you find Javier, and what do you see, Brevin? What's going on?
He's in a broom closet and he's fiddling around, sitting in an awkward position. He's like got his hands in a really weird way. He's like leaning back. He's like, "Hey, brother."
So this is back to Dave's email, right?
All right, let's hear it.
So we get into what I think was a broom closet or storage room. And there he is with what I can only describe as the biggest sombrero in Mexico. They have a small exchange, which, if anything, answered no questions at all, small mention of Dutch and Bill, and nothing to say why I couldn't spend more time with Javier in Red Dead 2. Distracted by my disappointment, he throws a crate at John and bolts. Oh, another great chase.
I thought that was hilarious.
He got to the gate, and much like yourself, Tyler, he didn't get very far before the lasso grabbed him. So I decided to take a slow ride to drop him off and see how long the exchange lasts. Not very, as in the conversation lasts while he's on your horse. And he has something interesting here, but I want to get to that later. So yeah, like, remember, Dave has the expectation of getting some reconciliation with these characters after playing through all of Red Dead 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a very small conversation, non-conversation, basically, with Javier.
Yeah, it's nothing we haven't heard already.
Yeah. But one thing that... So he said, nothing to say why I couldn't spend more time with Javier in Red Dead 2, which is really interesting. Because if you think about it, like, this scene and all of Javier's angle throughout Red Dead 1 does not lock him into the character that he is in Red Dead 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have gone on grand adventures with Javier, basically, and still had this interaction.
It would have been essentially the same, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe they ran into an issue where, like, was he so uninteresting in Red Dead 1 that they were like, well, we can't make him interesting in Red Dead 2. We gotta leave him uninteresting.
They wouldn't believe that he would be that interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I guess. But he sort of is interesting in Red Dead 2, isn't he? Like,
he's a cool... Like, what does he do? He plays a guitar and sings. That's all he does.
He
doesn't even do that many missions with you.
Every time he speaks, though, he does. It's not just like some default answer. Like, he has some character.
He does. He's very loyal.
Yes,
that's one thing we know, which I guess kind of shows through when you meet with him and he's like, what does he say? I did some. You're not going to shoot your own brother, are you? You know, we was family. And then John rebuttals him, and you and Dutch went crazy, and then family didn't mean so much.
Ah, interesting. Back to the family angle. So much of this is about family, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that Dave mentions here is the most interesting thing Javier says is, you, your wife, and your children can all rot in hell.
Yes, I wrote that down too.
So he noticed that, or Javier says children, not son.
Child, yeah, or whatever.
So either Javier just doesn't really remember John that much, or just assumes that he has more kids, or he knows about John's daughter, which is unbelievable, probably.
I don't know. I like the idea. I like the current lore that we've set up, where John had a daughter that went through a tragic death, and this shapes him to be the way he is and explains everything in this game.
Well, that's not lore that we set up. That is what happened. I mean, maybe not the whole shaped him to be who he is completely. Yeah, but, yeah. This is more a question about whether or not it's feasible that Javier would know about John's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't see why. Yeah, why would he? There'd be no reason.
And they don't act like they've seen each other recently, right? Or like
they're yeah, no, they don't
writing
at all.
Each other letters, so.
Because he even talks about, like, oh, you're working for the government now.
Yeah.
Which I love the way, I think it's funny how he says it. Oh, you're doing the government's work.
Oh, you're in sales now? So, Brevin, on a scale of 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with this conclusion of Javier?
3.5.
Mmm. I'm gonna go with 2.
Wow, that low.
Well, like, what could be a less satisfying conclusion? That's what I'm going through in my head.
How about this? What rating scale are you using? Are you using, like, the one that they use for, like, video games where it's, like, anything below a 7 is bad?
No, I think that's confusing and weird. 5 is average.
So you think it's way below average?
Well...
Because I don't know if I'd say it's way below. It's just below average. Like, I can't be too hard on it because I don't even know what I would change because Javier's not. I don't know. It's tough. Javier's not the most interesting character, so I don't know what they would do to make him interesting in this.
Here's what I would do.
Go ahead.
I would put them both in a situation where they are forced to cooperate in some way.
Ooh, I knew you were gonna say
that. Maybe
they
are holding off against like a wave of the Mexican army, and the Mexican army wants Javier dead as well, because why would they want him alive? That doesn't make any sense. But we'll talk about that. And then they're sort of forced to like reconcile, and then at the very last second, Javier thinks that John and him are cool, and then John's like, sorry, man, I gotta take you in anyway, and he gets him.
I like that. Yep, that is more interesting. It's a little overdone, I think, trope-wise. Like, that happens in things a lot, but it's more interesting, that's for sure. And it lends itself to having more interesting banter and conversation.
Yeah, I mean, maybe now that you're mentioning tropes, maybe it is more interesting that this is just like a non-event, that he finally gets this person who he's been walking around Mexico saying, you're disagreeing already.
Well, the reason why I don't think you can use that as like an argument to say it's okay to do this is because we just spent how long trying to find him, and you're making me want to lower my score. Like, I was being too nice. I was between a 3 and a 4, and I was like, I'll just go 3.5. But now that you say that, and you reminded me how much time I just spent doing missions for a cause that didn't really matter to me, yeah, that you're making me want to give it a 2.5.
It basically is like someone serving, like you've been served level of interesting. Yeah. And even that can be more interesting sometimes. Like, the chase can be longer, but it's just like he literally throws boxes at you, jumps out a window, and then you run after him. For not even that long, for like 20 seconds, not even, like 15 seconds. Yeah.
I thought there was going to be more missions to have to find him. I thought he was going to get away.
See, that would have been worse, I think. I'm glad.
Oh, yeah, that would have made me even more mad.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just like, I'm thinking about how you could make it less satisfying. That's the word I'm looking for. And maybe not good or whatever, but.
Maybe you just walked in and killed him. You're like, all right, it's done. That's the least satisfying, no effort.
Well, the least satisfying thing would have been like, you show up and like, Javier died of
I was going to say, he's been dead for years.
Yeah, by like 2 years ago. It's like, oh, okay. And then you just leave. Like, you go, like, no, this is it. You go to the library and you find a newspaper that says with his obituary, and then you bring that back to the agents. That would have been the least interesting.
But it would have been the most realistic. So that's definitely not a trope in the game.
That would be very interesting. And then like the army like knew that he was dead too, and they're like, we got this guy, he doesn't even Javier's been dead. so you get him, and what did you do? Did you kill him or did you capture him?
Captured him. I didn't even know you had the option to kill him.
Oh yeah, you can kill him. So you can
you have the option to shoot him or hog tie him, and then if you hog tie him, you can capture him, or that's, you were forced to capture him.
So I do remember, I think I watched like both versions of the cutscene, and it's funny because whether you let him live or you kill him, this what Reyes does is the same, where as you walk him into the cell and you drop him down, he says like, ah, old friends reunited, how romantic, or something to that line.
Dead body,
but when
on.
It's a dead body, it's like, ugh, sort of weird. and funny, because like, man, they were old friends. That is something to remember, right? If anything, it speaks to just like you're friends with someone, I don't know, like to some extent, once you've been friends with someone at one point in your life, if you see them again, you're able to like sync up and
yeah
be cool. But at the same time, like, if you haven't been living in proximity to them and like communicating everything, then it's very easy to just not be friends anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's what we see in this scene, where it's just like, we weren't really, I mean, maybe that is the fundamental truth, is that John and Javier were never really friends anyway, right? Just
what if he got Javier to start working with him to catch everyone else?
Hey, you want a government job? Pretty good, easy paycheck.
Would you rather die or work for the government? Your choice.
Oh, and then it just becomes like a never-ending snake of outlaws, where you keep giving that ultimatum.
There's like 20 outlaws just chasing one guy. And he's like, well, you gotta join us.
And then eventually the government is just all outlaws. Like, that is... I guess that's actually how America got started, now that you mention it. Anyway, so you bring Javier to the cell, and he says some mean things to you, I think. And
yeah, that he wants about... you to go shove it, go die in hell.
Something like that. Yeah, something to that extent. And then we move right along, right?
Yeah. Then we yep, then we pretend like it never happened.
Oh, some things I don't see. Normally when we take notes while we're playing, Brevin, we have a hard time remembering when we wrote the note. And now it's just hopeless. So I'm just going to rattle some things off.
Let's go.
So for a land of immigrants, you don't like foreigners very much. And that's that's something that Reyes says to John, which is just like a critique of America, basically. That's actually a theme that comes up in Hamilton, if you had watched that. Oh. But I thought it was interesting. And Abraham himself, though, says that Chinese people are of an inferior race. So it's like,
wow.
Sweet, sweet, cool, Abraham. That's nice.
Yep, that's what we want to hear.
You know what? Han Solo isn't racist, right? So is it more interesting to be racist or less interesting to be racist?
That's a weird question. I don't like it, so we're gonna move on. I don't like that question.
Don't be racist, folks, right?
Yeah, don't. that was like, I want to get people's opinions on that. Like, I'm talking about like in movies and like that type of, not in real life.
Yeah, not in real life. You don't you'd be like, wow, Jim Crow, please, I'm so interested in what you have to say. Yeah, so write into reddeadcast@gmail.com with your thoughts. So John actually says this, quote, "You'll make a fine leader, Abraham," which I think is John's cynicism about leadership and not a reflection of, it's not John saying you're a good person, Abraham. In fact, maybe it's even a slight that like he hates leaders so much that he just doesn't.
He would make a, wow, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. That leaders are all terrible people, so you'll make a good leader.
Which speaks to the nihilism part again. Like, I feel like John Marston represents, like, the constituency of just, like, despising government and the idea that someone could make decisions on someone else's behalf. Like, he's sort of like the uber-libertarian, and that is, I guess, what Dutch's philosophy is as well. So yeah, it's that even goes further into the narrative of John not caring about the conflict in Mexico, I don't know. I mean, if you're a libertarian, really, then you want to support people having more individual freedom. So therefore, you would think you would want to support the Mexican rebels. Although if he sees that Reyes is the one who's going to lead him, and he probably isn't going to really give them that much freedom anyway. Yeah, okay, I can see how John would get to where he gets.
We figured it out.
I figured it out. I don't know what... See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I just wrote, I want to go home as a line. And I'm assuming
you meant because, like, this is so, like, unsatisfying.
But like, maybe John says it? I don't know.
I don't remember that. I don't remember John saying that.
So I wrote that. I wrote, I want to go home.
I think that's much funnier.
I'm just like...
It was uncapitalized. I, no period. I want to go home.
I'm just in Mexico. Like, this has just gone on for so long. Yeah. Yep.
Is that it for that mission?
I noticed that the handcuffs look like sausages.
What?
And let's see. I wrote down your wife sends her regards.
Oh, yeah. So that, I do remember that line. That's when you bring in Javier, when you capture him, and the Ross is there, and Ross says that, and he laughs afterwards.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
That makes sense. That's why I wrote, hey, a car. I wrote that note.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm glad you were able to pick
the car that I always talk about in Red Dead 1.
Yes, and we're going to talk about that car. I bet you believe that, Brevin.
Yeah.
Your wife sends her regards. Yeah, he is just the worst, huh? Agent Ross.
When we get to the part where we talk more to him, I think he's an interesting character.
Where on the Han Solo scale, though?
So Han Solo's a 10?
Han Solo's not even a 10 on his own. He's a 5 on the scale, and then
okay.
He's either less or more interesting than Han Solo.
I'd give him a 7.
I think that's a fair reading. Meanwhile, Reyes is probably a 6, right?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Or maybe he's also a 7. If you give everyone a 7.
I don't think.
But I think Reyes might be more interesting than Ross, because Ross is sort of a stereotype, isn't he?
He is, but let's get to that part and then we'll discuss.
All right. We keep saying that, Brevin, and this episode's never going to end. All right, so now we have an appointed time, which is the siege in Escalera, right?
Yeah, I had a really weird moment with this mission, and I think I had some type of glitch. So I started this mission, and I had a really long loading screen, so I was like, great, the game's gonna, like, freeze or something. But it just went immediately into a duel, and I was like, did I just miss something?
Weird. And
it didn't play the cutscene at all. So I was like, I'm pretty sure there was a cutscene before this, because otherwise this doesn't make any sense. So I purposely, like, tried to die and then watched the cutscene. It was really odd, though.
Wait, what was the... I don't even remember a duel, to be honest.
This is the mission where you go and save the rebels, like the army's breaking in, basically, to the rebel town. And you run up on them, and you're like, hey, stop it. And Oh, yeah, they have Reyes, like... It's so long ago. And then this is the mission when Luisa runs in.
But who are you dueling? I don't remember dueling anyone.
Like a captain or something. I don't know. It's some unknown character.
That actually happened? That is so bizarre that is... What?
Because he's like... So Reyes is there. There's two other men with this captain or whatever. They're holding Reyes hostage. Luisa runs in to try and save him. Immediately dies. No reaction, which is still weird. And then... John actually does get annoyed. I don't know if he gets mad, but he gets annoyed with the fact that she dies and shoots the two guys that are holding Reyes hostage. And the captain is there, and he's like, let's settle this like men.
Okay,
like, straight up like a movie.
I don't remember that at all, but okay.
Yeah, and then you duel.
Sweet. I'm glad they managed to work that mechanic in some more. something that I did notice that I think is cool is Reyes, when he's captured, doesn't change. He's not groveling. He's not saying, oh, okay, I'll work for you guys now, like, I can rat out my people. He at least has integrity in that situation.
Yeah, he believes in his cause enough to not, you know, break under pressure.
Yeah, which is actually, maybe that's why I think he's more interesting, is that he's not as, like, flaky as you would imagine him being, the way he carries himself.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it's interesting, too, like, I'm pretty sure he was talking to John when he was, like, he's talking to the general, telling him to shoot John, which I thought was weird, because, like, is John, like, so dangerous, like, Reyes looks at John as so dangerous that, like, he's like, you need to kill him now, he's gonna kill you. It was weird, it was odd. I'm pretty sure that's how I took it, like, Reyes being funny.
Wait, can you explain that again? I don't understand.
So after you kill the two guys, maybe not even, maybe they're still there. But everyone's kind of holding guns at each other. And Reyes is like, just shoot him. Like, but talking to the captain, not to John, it looks like. It's really weird. That's how I took it.
That is fun. I want to rewatch that scene now, because that's weird. So, if maybe he's like saying...
Because John... Yep.
Well, he's just like, he knows that John is going to win anyway, because he's seen John in action.
Yeah,
before.
I think that's how I took it, that he was being funny, and, like, John is such a dangerous man, he's trying to help out the captain to get a slight, like, chance.
You better shoot this guy, don't tell him your evil plot. Yeah, that's funny. This is really an interesting mission, I think, something that actually stuck out to me was that the army is not hostile towards you until you get up to the hill. You know what I'm talking about? Like, there's a set piece moment where, like, they're shoving people out of a bar and lining them up against the wall like a firing squad. And you can just walk by them. Like, they're not antagonistic towards you at all. Of course, I took the opportunity to shoot them because I was I wanted to save the citizens. But I just think that sort of speaks to... I like that even in this moment, they're still dedicated to the idea that John is not really involved in this conflict. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even know who to react to him because he's just been playing both sides and it's just so non-affiliatory. Ooh, I don't know if that's a word.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah, so you save Reyes, and you want to talk about Luisa's death?
Yeah, Luisa runs up screaming, like, you know, stop it, and immediately gets shot in the head.
She's carrying a knife.
Yeah, she doesn't run up with a gun. She runs up with a knife, which you don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
It's a very long run up. It's like a realistic depiction of what would happen. Like, in a movie, you might imagine her, like, getting close and, like, almost getting him, but no, it's like you can tell she's sort of doomed. But I think that's sort of the point, that she loves Reyes, or the idea in her head of Reyes, so much that she's willing to do that for him, and he does not even react.
Yeah, he doesn't. He does he even comment?
I don't think anyone says anything, and that's basically John what
says. John does say, you had to kill that poor woman, which is why I was like, is that even Luisa? I look just like her.
Maybe John doesn't even know that it's Luisa. They're just so...
No one knows.
Luisa is an interesting character. Luisa is like an 8 on the Han Solo scale.
Yeah, I would say Luisa's the second most interesting character introduced.
Lennon Rickage is number one?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't... I think it's just back to like the nihilism thing where it's like, listen, people are dying. Who cares? But it is sad because she is the truest... like most morally competent and aware individual in this entire Mexico narrative, and she just gets gunned down with a false cause in her heart that is her love for Reyes. And
ooh,
just
that's, when you frame it like that, that's tough.
It is tough. Her whole family is dead, right? Or maybe her mom and her sister escaped, but her dad died, and it's like of course, the broken family doesn't get the attention it deserves, but the you know, rebel leader who can wax poetic and brag about how many people he killed, they're talking about him. Let's move on, Brevin.
All right. So, what happens? Oh, yeah, then you kill a bunch of rebels. You kill a bunch of army men who are fighting the rebels. You save the rebels. And why is Bill Williams in there?
Oh. So now you know that Bill is with Allende.
But why?
I'm going to read Dave's email for a little bit. So you finally learn where Bill is. He's with Allende, which Reyes loves. So you go after them and their armored carriage. I don't know what he means by "and Reyes loves," but whatever. That's okay. The first time,
like some offhand comment.
I think he's just being silly. And then he says, "The first time I deliberately shot horses," which is funny to think of an armored carriage where the horses are not protected at all. But they're just like, you know, relying on the Geneva Convention for horses.
Yeah.
I can't not remember why they're together. I think it is because Allende knows that John wants Bill, so maybe he's trying to use him as a bargaining chip. But what would
the bargaining be? What is he trying to get?
Well, eventually, when you stop the carriage, is he trying to say, like, you can have Bill and just let me go? Is that what he's doing? I'm honestly struggling to remember.
Yes, I think that's what happens. I also had a glitch at this point, which was really funny.
Ooh, okay, what is it?
So you stop the wagon and, you know, Bill comes out and Allende comes out and they play a little cutscene or whatever. Bill's on the ground. I shot Bill after I let them talk for quite a bit. Like, I let it sit there for like a minute. I wanted to hear their entire conversation. I shoot Bill and Allende just runs off and doesn't get shot. And the game was like soft locked.
What?
Yeah, oh, man. Like, it didn't trigger the cutscene for Reyes to shoot Allende. And it was stuck there, and I was like, am I actually softlocked? And I was. I had to use dynamite to kill myself.
That's funny.
And then it was fine the second time I did it.
Wow. So, what Dave did is he said, at this point, I was done with Mexico and felt a bit ripped off by Javier. So Allende uses Bill as a bargaining chip to save his sorry butt and gives you the option to take your revenge on Bill. I decided to not shoot Bill, who had said nothing this entire game. And he says, why? ? I don't care about Allende. And tried to lasso him. If anyone has tried this, you will know that he cannot be lassoed. But not only that, but then Reyes just shoots him anyway, along with Allende. He said, I literally wanted to blow his head off at that moment because that power-hungry, womanizing, self-serving piece of trash had just taken what could have been my only closure away from me.
Yeah,
what a terrible experience for your first playthrough of Red Dead 1 to be, huh?
But there truly is no closure on killing Williamson. You just kill him, and that's it.
I'm pretty sure I killed Allende, because I was like, I don't really care to kill Bill. Like, mm-hmm. Why? I mean, okay, yeah, Bill has done some terrible things in the north, like where with his people killing all the people at the ranch and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Allende, I think, is more terrible in that he is like an articulated evil, whereas Bill is just like a raw, just dumb evil, as we have mentioned.
I love that, dumb evil.
But yeah, Dave says, at that moment I wanted to slam down my controller and go back to Red Dead 2 to be Arthur, who wouldn't have put up with any of this nonsense. But alas, I persisted and finally got to leave Mexico. So yeah, Brevin, okay, how do you rate this encounter on the satisfactory scale with Bill Williamson?
This is a straight up one.
Wow, I think it's better than Javier. At least something happens. At least there's like a chase scene, and then you get them out of the carriage, and then there's like a Mexican standoff. Like, that's way more interesting than...
There's no standoff. They don't have guns pointed at each other. It's you're aiming at two unarmed people. Bill's on the ground, helpless. Completely helpless.
Isn't, Allende has a gun pointed at Bill, right? I think.
Does he? I just remember him putting him on the ground. Maybe he's like forcing him to like submit. I can't remember, honestly.
The more we talk about it, the less I care to make my side of the argument. I'm like, yeah, I just the idea that you have these two bad people in front of you and you sort of can choose like who your evil is, like who you're prioritizing, I think is interesting. I don't like the fact that you can't lasso Bill as like why would Reyes shoot Bill? Like what that yeah, that 'cause that is annoying. Game. Brevin, don't remind me. yeah, so...
I don't know, man. I just was not satisfied at all with this. There was less dialogue said here from Bill than I think any of the other cutscenes in the game. Like, the most interesting scene with Bill was the first scene.
Yeah, you're right. So we kill Bill, and then we bring... Do we bring his... Do we... Show him bringing the body back to the agents?
Yeah, or it shows you going to Blackwater. Pretty sure.
I remember coming out of, like after the mission, riding on the street, and then Allende's dead body was on the ground in the road, and it was very bizarre. So I don't think you... Maybe you do just go all the way back?
No, you don't, because now I'm remembering you like... You know, kind of like go, hurrah, yay, Reyes, you're going to be the next president. You know, try not to ruin it.
John says to Abraham, if you win power, remember why you wanted it.
Yes, I like that. I'm glad you wrote that down because I didn't write it down, but I remember it being a cool quote. I like that.
Is it, because this is what bothers me, is why does Abraham want power? He wants people to say that he's a cool guy. That's all he cares about.
Well, he says, he always talks about how he's going to lead, you know. The new Mexico or whatever he wants to call
new
it.
Mexico.
He's gonna open the state and everything. No, he's gonna lead the new. I can't think of a better word. He's gonna lead the new Mexico into whatever they're gonna do with Reyes, and like he talks about how he wants to be the leader.
I wrote down. Excuse me. Another quote from earlier where he says something along the lines of "We'll write our own stories," which.
That one I don't remember.
Is just, it, I think it goes into like the narcissistic, like, winners write the textbooks thing where he's just going to make himself out to be a hero and then gloat the whole time. Mm-hmm. Something that's funny though that you just made me think of is, have you ever considered how bizarre it is that the United States has a state called New Mexico, where we literally just took another country's name and said, no, this is the new version of your country?
That can't be why, right? That can't be why. I honestly have not looked into the history of New Mexico enough. I don't know if that's an odd thing.
But just imagine if we like bought Alaska and then called it New Canada.
Just, yeah, like, that's the new name for Alaska, New Canada. I definitely like that. Let's all go to New Canada, guys.
That's so funny and like absurd and stupid. We can't just come up with our own names, man. It is hard to name Mexico. Things, I will say. All right, Brevin. Yes, it is. So, we are out of Mexico.
Finally.
I'm not going to let you go so easily. So, any final reflections, if I may, about the Mexican experience, about the vibe of Mexico, the story?
It was so worth... I'm so satisfied with how all these hours of work ended up being... with me finally capturing Javier Escuela and killing Bill Williamson. It was the most satisfying. I'm so glad I spent 10 hours on the Mexico portion of the game doing this. I'm so happy. I couldn't have written it any better, Rockstar.
Okay, well, maybe that's the question. Could you, Brevin, someone who does not write... have written Mexico...
someone who doesn't have the ability to write.
Have written the Mexico storyline better. Like, in hindsight, do you think you would have?
I don't know. Probably worse, but... I don't know. Like, I feel like anything would have been better than the deaths of... Like, truly, like, it was... Why did I give it a 3.5 before? What part of me was satisfied? Zero.
You're just going down the more we talk about it. So John comes to Mexico. He meets Landon Ricketts. He learns about a rebellion that's going on. Where's Javier Escuela? Where's Bill Williamson? He helps out the rebels a little bit, helps out the army a little bit, literally burns down a village and like kills rebels and helps save someone named Luisa, who's a school teacher. And I think that's the same person. I'm pretty sure Luisa is the one.
I think we did the same thing before. We weren't sure. She's a school teacher,
yeah. Yeah, and then you continue aiding each side back and forth with each side promising you, we know where they are, we'll get them for you, don't worry. And you just keep going, and then finally you find them, and the war ends, and the rebels win. I think I would prefer... narratively, if the army won in the end, because what would be a more nihilistic ending than that, right? If that's what they're going for, bring it on, man. Establishment government that does not have any respect for their population, let them win, Mexico, whatever.
I could see that. I think it would have been, would it have been more interesting to turn in like Javier into the military? Would that have even made sense?
Turn him into the military?
Well, like, because you wouldn't be working... Well, I guess you could still be working with the rebels. Like, how would they lose and John still come out, like, perfectly fine?
No, Javier and Bill would probably be working with the rebels, because that's...
Oh, you're saying, like, people... completely switch everything. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, first of all, I actually wonder if this was, like, one of the... Sorry, I'm, like, moving my feet on my chair. One of the potential setups for Mexico that they scrapped, where they're actually with the rebels, and then you help the army get them back. Because why are they with the army? Does not make any sense to me.
Yeah, maybe the army is so corrupted. I don't know, but they work with criminals. That's like the only angle.
But why
would they be important figures?
Or why would Bill and Javier even want to be with the army? Like. I guess they're running from John and they want protection? Is that it?
I don't know.
do they really believe in John enough?
Well,
to...
does Bill even have his gang to back him up anymore? So maybe he essentially has to join, not join the army, but you know what I mean? Hide behind the army.
So we do know, after the assault on Fort Mercer, the second in command guy, or whoever of Bill Williams' gang we interrogated, says that Bill just went south. And then, he just says he went across the border, and then John is the one who says, Javier Escuela. Like, as if Bill is going to get Javier.
Yeah.
So...
And that's the other thing, why, too. There's no interaction. There's no interaction between Bill and Javier.
Yeah, why don't we have that? That would have been interesting.
That would have been really cool. But nope. Would have been realistic. I don't know. I think so it would have. They would have joined up. I don't know how they would have figured out that they're both running from the same person, you know, without like cell phones and stuff. But, yes. But like they would have, you know, it would have made sense for them to join to fight together.
If Bill actually was going to speak to Javier and say, listen, John is working for the government, coming after us, let's team up so we can take him out. That would have made sense. Like, yeah. That would have explained why Bill left the fort. Which, by the way, he had a fort armed to the teeth with gangsters. Why would he ever think that John would ever have been able to assault the fort? Yeah, no reason.
No reason.
Even the local, like, law enforcement couldn't root them out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So, what even is... What?
What is this game?
Anyway,
this is why we can't pick apart this game.
But I do think that if the army won, it would have cemented this idea that like it doesn't matter what you do with politics because bad people get control in the end and just like enjoy your blip of life in this universe because it all is terrible eventually, which is not what I believe personally. But that seems to be the message that they're sending with Mexico. So if they committed to that. That would have been more interesting or at least cohesive and been like, that's what they're trying to say is,
you know. Bad people always win.
Yeah, which maybe they wouldn't do that because it could have been portrayed as like racist somehow. Like this idea that, I don't know. I don't want to get into that, I guess, but it
does
just...
Does Rockstar even care at that point? Like, do they care about China? I feel like they have racist things in Grand Theft Auto.
That is a... whole other question to ask, man. Like, what, where is their head at with this? Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. It is just boggling. What? I don't know. Anyway, I think that we can move on from Mexico, right?
Finally.
Let's post our pictures on Facebook now that we're back.
Good riddance, Mexico.
Pick up our dog from our dog sitter and get back to the daily grind and say, oh, you should have seen Cozumel. You should have seen Chuparosa. It was crazy.
I've seen El Presidio.
I thought Javier
ran two horses into a door. Blew him up.
I rode trains 16 times and killed 32,000 horses. Wow. Yeah. That I guess that's what Reyes would say about his trip to Mexico if he came back. But anyway, that's it, Brevin. That's all we have from Mexico.
On the black one.
That's the end of the game, right? That's it.
Oh, could you imagine if that was the end of the game? Oh my god. I would lose it.
See, now that puts a fine point on it, like how narratively sloppy this is. Is if the game ended here, we would have been like, wow.
Wow, I got gypped.
All right, okay, $60. Another hypothetical. Ready?
Yep.
You, 2010, mm-hmm. little boy Brevin goes down to his GameStop, and he buys Red Dead Redemption. He's like, oh, cool, a game where I can be a cowboy. Mm-hmm. Yippee. You take it home, you put it in your Xbox 360, you play it, and you get all the way through to Mexico. You get Javier Escuela, you kill Bill Williamson, credits roll.
I think I still, I don't know how annoyed I would have been. I would have been like, oh, cool, I'll go play online. But that's probably what it would have been, like a realistic depiction of my mind back then. I still feel like I would have been like, that could have been better. That was kind of boring. I did play story games back then, so it's not like I would have no idea and be like, wow, I can't believe that was crazy. I definitely wouldn't have a positive reaction. I'll say that.
It
would be very neutral. I feel
you bring up an interesting point where I feel like for a very long time the ends of video games were like mostly bad. Like 80% of video game ends were not good because of the just like the handcuffs of video games are meant to be an interactive piece of fiction, and that is what that's the value that they add. That's why you would tell a story through a video game rather than a book. But endings are so finite, and once it's done, like there's no action to affect anything anymore. Like that is the narrative. So like people didn't like the ending of Fallout 3 the first time around, for example, and that's maybe a weird gameplay criticism and not necessarily about the narrative ending, but there's plenty of examples where like games end and people are like, yeah, like that wasn't satisfying. But actually Red Dead 1 has a great ending in my opinion.
Yeah, I like Red Dead 1's ending.
So I think if you maybe actually if you go back to 2010 and you didn't have that expectation of the ending being what it is, you would beat Mexico and be like, yeah, all right, I'm ready for the next game.
What are we gonna do next? We're gonna go catch Dutch. That would be the next game. It'd be a cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, it would be like Halo 2, right? The Halo 2 ending.
Halo 2's ending. that's a one that's debated.
Isn't that's that the sure. same thing though? Where like
it's essentially yeah,
you're just about like, to get to the final thing, and then you get the.
Well, yeah, Master Chief's like, finish. We're gonna finish this fight, and the game ends. That's essentially what
it is. It's like a meme level of ending. Oh, I love that. I'm happy Halo 2 exists just for like the angry people back in 2006 or whenever.
Imagine that bringing that game home on release night and then not getting any possible ending that was satisfying whatsoever. You know, you gotta wait 3 years for the next one.
But Halo 3, though.
Halo 3 was a very satisfying ending, in my opinion, to the Halo series. And I wish it was the ending, but we'll leave that for another.
How did we kill? We talked about Halo again, Brevin. What is our problem?
I don't know.
All right.
You brought up Halo 2.
I know. I brought it up like 3 times. So, finally, we're back. One thing that I wrote was leaving Mexico, everything is so green all of a sudden.
Yeah, it is. Everything's not white anymore.
Yes. Or like reddish. So, yeah, we are back. Did you go straight to Blackwater or did you sort of dawdle a bit and
straight to Blackwater?
Yeah, me too. I was ready for some new lands and some
and new characters.
Yes. So who are the new characters we meet, Brevin, or what happens when we get back?
So we get to talk to Ross a lot more. We meet the is it a doctor or professor?
A professor.
Professor, yeah, we meet the professor guy. I absolutely hate this guy, but we'll talk about that more. I think you're meant to hate him, so that's a good thing. Obviously you're meant to hate him. I don't even think it's not even up to question. And then we meet Ross's detective. I don't know his name. Do you remember his name? His sidekick?
I don't know his name, but I thought he was a great character. Like a cool guy. I actually really liked this guy.
No, I liked everyone that was in, well, in the sense I think their characters are interesting.
Well, I was actually thinking, something that I wrote down is like, Edgar Ross just seems like he'd be a terrible person to work with. You ever think about that? Like, if you
see that.
Were on the same team as him and, like, trying to get to some... He would just be sabotaging and, like, playing the blame game. Like, just, like, a weasel of a person. But the other guy, he seemed very sensible. He was just, like, chatting with John while you were... The first thing you do is you go and you raid the sunken ferry, right?
Yeah.
And...
Because you think Dutch is there.
Because you think Dutch is there. And it turns out it's just... Nostas?
It's a trap, yeah, Nostas.
The Native American informant, I guess he is.
Yes, that's exactly what he is.
And he's, like, injured and stuff, so you need to sort of help walk him out. And, of course, yeah, they ambush you.
Can I say this one thing? Hold on. Go ahead.
No, I think you can go.
All right. So, Ross is a terrible person. But every single time, like, John says anything to him, I think it's really interesting what Ross's rebuttals are. Do you know what I mean by that?
Because he has confidence in his position.
Yes, but I actually understand why he has confidence in his position. Because, you know, John's saying, you know, you guys are terrible for just stringing me along like this, like, let me go see my family. But then every time John says that, Ross is like, well, yeah, you can tell that to the hundreds of families that you murdered. That's interesting to me. That I was like, wow, like, I don't, like, I'm, like, stuck in the middle on this. Like, Ross, I understand where you're coming from completely. It's weird. It's tricky.
That is funny, huh? I mean, really, like, if you got called in for jury duty, Brevin, and you had John Marston up on the stands, like, we wouldn't think twice about it. We'd be like, oh, yeah, like, this guy killed people, and that's it. But because we're seeing it through his eyes, we are like, but no, Agent Ross, there's a complexity here where he just wants to be with his family. It's like, okay, yeah, right. Like, tell that to the literally hundreds, perhaps thousands of people that you widowed. Like, okay.
When Ross hits John with that line of like, where John's talking about how he misses his family, and Ross is like, yeah, tell that to the hundreds of families that are missing their families too because they're dead. Like, oh, I was like, ooh, that's sharp. I don't know another way to say it.
And there's sort of, because there's no rebuttal to that, it's like, oh, they really can just string John along. Like, there's John can do.
I wrote that exactly. I said, why does John act like he has any say on what's happening right now? Because he doesn't.
I think he needs to at least speak up for his own ego's sake to say, like, I'm at least protesting. But John is smart enough, I think, to realize nothing he can say will change anything.
Mm-hmm. But he talks about, like, putting a gun up to the other detective's head and, like, I don't think I won't hurt you right now. Like, I think that's just John being tough. And, like you said, trying to keep some type of ego.
Hold on, let me see. I wrote something about that. Oh, yeah. I said, oh, he is mad. Wow, I'll blow a hole in your head, he says at some point. One thing that I think Ross says, I've never insulted your meager intelligence. Please do not insult mine.
Yep. I remember that.
So it's really interesting to see John from this perspective because, yeah, you really, I don't know.
Can't side with him.
You can't. I disagree in the idea principally of using someone as a means to an end, which is what they're doing with John. So I think they, as far as I'm concerned, they don't have like a moral standing in doing this.
Which I understand that.
However, they have way more moral standing than John does, right? Yeah. Like they can even say, well, that's what they say, is I'm using one evil to take care of another, and I'm not putting my own men who just are family men who work at an agency or probably sit behind desks most of the time in danger to hunt down these crazy criminals when I can just use another criminal to do it and risk his life.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Brevin, I think this podcast is turning you and me into agents, right?
Yeah, I'm Agent Ross. That's who I am. I've sided with him.
What's the name of the guy in Red Dead 2? I don't remember anymore.
Oh, I can't remember.
No,
Pinkerton was the first thing I came on. Obviously, that's not it.
Yes, I'm Agent Pinkerton, and you're Agent Ross. All right, so
don't bother me now that you brought that up.
I do really like Nostus. I'm just going to keep struggling with that. Sorry.
He sounds like Dutch.
He is the voice actor for Dutch, as Dave points out.
Makes a lot of sense.
Voiced by Ben Davies, a.k.a. Dutch.
It sounds like Dutch, but talking slower and with less confidence.
Which is sort of funny that it sounds like Dutch, because this is very close in proximity to the part where you see Dutch.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. I'll get back to Ben's, not Ben's email, sorry, Dave's email. Dutch is up to his old tricks and is corrupting the local natives into doing his bidding. Mm-hmm. Nostus wants John's help to stop it, and for once I feel John might actually be doing the right thing with actual evidence that Dutch is where Nostus said he was. So you arrive, and then we're gonna get to what happens, but I love this narrative, or I don't know what you would call it, this consistency in that he's exploiting Native Americans again. And it's even sadder this time because it's just like, their situation is now completely helpless. Like, there's no reservation, there's no place in society for these people. So they're just, which we will see in a upcoming scene, Brevin, in the final mission that we'll talk about today. But yeah, so what is the, help me out with like the order of what happens here.
For what where are we starting?
We like, start on the like car. How do we get from the boat to Professor McDougal, for example?
We take the car back after. Well, we save Nastas. He's hurt, and we bring him back to the professor, who can take care of him.
Yes. Oh, that's right. And you actually ride the car back, and they're like, it's talking funny because it can only go so fast, and they're like,
yeah. Aren't you so comfortable, John? And he's like, no.
Yes! I love that.
That was so funny.
Yeah, they're like, how do you like the future with the automobile? He says, slow. Aren't you comfortable? No. Beautiful. Gosh. Yep, so you get back, and then that's when you meet Professor McDougal, right? Because don't they have him patch up Nastas or something?
Yeah, apparently he's a doctor. That must have been why I thought he was a doctor.
But he is a professor.
They call him Professor. I know that for sure. One thing, too, you get the M1911 pistol or whatever it is that looks just like it. That pistol, it's got one of the most satisfying shots I've heard in a game in a long time. It's just powerful.
Oh, it is so good. It's my favorite gun in this game.
It is mine, too, now, easily. It just has such a good sound. They did such a good job with it. Because every other gun is like, eh. It's like the rolling block is probably the second best, I would say.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
But that gun is just like on another tier. It sounds so nice.
That gun is just, I really don't have any reason to use any other gun. It's even good at like mid to long range. Like it's accurate.
It's so good. I think that goes to show how like important sound design is in games, especially when you're hearing these gunshots constantly. Like you want a gun to sound good,
so it's probably basically the same thing as the volcanic pistol, but because it sounds and feels cooler, you're like all about it. Yeah
That's exactly what it is.
So Professor McDougal, let's talk about him. What is up with this guy? He is like
a racist,
an excommunicated Yale professor who studies like the differences between races scientifically, and he's into eugenics. I think you know what eugenics is.
What is that?
It's like this quote-unquote science that like if you like you can intentionally breed humans such that you will root out like genetic diseases, but it's also super racist, obviously.
That's some weird territory.
So it's like the basis of like the Hitler philosophy of Aryan whatever. Actually, something that I learned is that I'm not even gonna say it because I think I'm just gonna get it wrong. Never mind.
The better choice.
Yeah. take the low road. Is it low road or high road, Brevin?
That's take the low road for sure.
Is it so? The high road is like the difficult road, or the high road is the easy road
because it's higher up. See, I would rather drive on a low road than a high road.
But is a low road what even is low or high referring to in this context? Is it like literally elevation from the ground? Because if that's the case, then a high road is like a highway, and then that's easier to take.
Wait, so you're saying all highways are above ground? Like, well, yes, they are, I guess.
That I'm thinking true. Of, like, overpasses and stuff.
Oh, okay. What doesn't make any sense.
Well, what other road would be like that?
I don't know. I've never really thought about what high road means, like, take the high road. I don't think I've ever used it, which is good, because I don't know what it means. Use that.
So, if you know what this means, write into reddeadcast@gmail.com, please.
Explain, please.
I think people say I'll take the high road as in like I'll be honest and I'll do what's right, or like do it the right way.
I'll do the honorable thing.
Yeah. So is it like low as in like morally low to say I'll take the low road and like I'll steal?
I don't think low road is a thing. I don't think that's the
thing. You think it's just take the high road?
It's only take the high road.
So I'm adding the low road side.
Yeah, you're definitely making up something right now.
Okay, all right, cool. I'm glad I'm doing that live on the air. That's fun. Okay, so.
If you're more filled in on this, write in.
Professor McDougal, not a great person. I even write down, why are we even helping this guy? I guess you're helping him so that... I don't have a good reason. You go and talk to him to check in on Nostis the next day because you know that he can help you. So I don't know, like, why isn't Nostis just the point of contact and not the professor?
It's so we can have some comical lines about how killing the buffalo will eventually make them stronger. If we kill so many of them, they'll be better at not dying.
Wait, is that actually something he says? Because that is
yeah, he says funny. That.
Okay.
Yeah, he talks about how it's impossible for things to go extinct. Like, the more you kill them, the more stronger they'll get, so they don't.
Oh, that's so funny. It's like a twist on, like, adaptation. Ugh.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is like Rockstar making fun of academia, I guess. But it's... He even identifies as being ousted by... Yale, so is it really...
I think it's just another Red Dead character.
Just don't even explore it anymore. Like, I should just cut my losses.
Just laugh at what he says.
Ha 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 ha. So racist.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes, so... And then, okay, so what's next, Brevin? Because I honestly remember the last mission, but not much.
So the last mission... let's see, hold on, I gotta look up. Oh, yeah, so... Okay, the doc. So this we're going to go to a meeting with Dutch's gang, and the professor's talking about how like he's so fascinated with Dutch because you know it's the white man along that hitched all the what's the word he uses? Savages.
Savages. Yes. Yeah. So that's what McDougal is all about is investigating the science behind savagery, and it's. It's so fun. Okay, so okay, I actually do think that this character is funny. Now that I'm thinking about it more, like, so what he's saying is, like, oh, the only reason why people would act this way is if they had a difference in their blood or genetic makeup. Mm-hmm. When obviously the reason why they're acting this way is because their entire civilization was uprooted by aliens, essentially, and they just have nothing left, and like they are given. They are ruled by, like, a philosophy that they don't even subscribe to, so they're just completely lost. And they are still very much the same human beings, but in vastly different circumstances that this professor can't even comprehend because he's... Something that I love that Nostis says is... this is later on, but it's a mission where Nostis, the professor, and John are going to meet with some of... Dutch's gang members who are the quote-unquote savages. Mm-hmm. And John or the professor says something like, I don't know why they would even want to meet with you. And Nasta says, I think they're interested in hearing what conclusions a white man has made on hundreds of years of society and culture from the comfort of his hotel room.
That's good.
I didn't really like that. That's beautiful. That's like a shot at like so much. And It actually ties into my own personal conundrum about, like, thinking too much about things and not doing as much. Mm-hmm. Where, like, you can only understand so much about life and existence by thinking about it. Whereas doing... But I this is obviously a more new specific and nuanced take on just...
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Brevin, what's next? What's the next mission?
That was the final one. Uh-uh. Well, remember, we talked about it before. We accidentally skipped one mission, or I did.
Oh, yeah. So, Brevin accidentally skipped Great Men Are Not Always Wise. Number 44 on the IGN Wiki Red Dead Redemption walkthrough list. So, we'll actually talk about that next time. But yes. But the for purely scientific reasons mission... Wait, is... Oh, are you saying that's the one that you didn't do?
The one before that on that list. The one on the rooftop.
But I'm looking at for purely scientific reasons, and it starts with them on a rooftop.
I swear it did not. Hold on. Now, hold on. What was it called? Purely scientific
reasons. We're just doing some live research.
Okay, I found it. Oh yeah, this is the one where you get held up by Dutch's gang, and they kill Nastas. Remember that? We didn't even talk about that.
What? This is all the same.
Yeah, that is. That's all the same mission. I didn't write much except no Nastas. That was the only thing, because you show up there and essentially it's a complete trap.
So that's the mission where he says, I think they're interested in hearing what conclusions a white man has made, etc.
Yeah, that is that mission, yes.
And so we can talk about this. I'm very confused, though, because right now I'm looking at the Red Dead wiki for purely scientific reasons, and it's showing pictures of a completely different mission. The one where you see Dutch and he's, like, holding a gun up to a woman.
Yeah, that's definitely not the right mission.
What is going on right now?
I am so confused. I think that's the mission afterwards.
All right, fine. So, okay, so this is the one. Okay. Nope. I think it's the wiki that's messed up. I am serious right now. If you click on for purely scientific reasons, what do you see?
Yep. I see the intro picture is them being held up, the right characters, McDougal's, whatever his name is, and Nastas. And then if I scroll down, there's no photos except there is two videos that look like it's the right thing.
Can I share my screen with you? Hold on.
Not easily. Maybe.
Check this out. Ready? We're doing some live updating.
You're on the IGN wiki.
Yes, and look, for purely scientific reasons, and it includes pictures of the other mission.
Yep, that's definitely wrong.
Aha! Yeah,
that's completely wrong.
I beat him, guys. I did it. I figured out an error in this, like,
10-year-old. Yeah, they use the same photos from the mission before.
But I do think the text is correct if I actually took the time to read it.
Mom, we don't read here. We just look at pictures.
Yeah, so there's a bear, and then McDougal shoots it for basically no reason. And then Nastas is sort of like, well, now I have to That's kill funny. It because you up. Angered it.
Who do we message from? To fix their 10-year-old wiki good.
Well, if it's actually a wiki, we could just contribute ourselves. But, of course, I'm not going to do that.
Of course not.
Page tools, edit. Yeah, we can totally edit this. But
we'll leave it for the next
time. We'll not do it while we're on a podcast recording. So, for purely scientific reasons, you help Nastas. Well, no, he's just helping you guys, basically.
Yeah, he's helping you.
And they show up, and is there any was there any expectation at all that it would have not ended this way? Like, what? They thought that they were just going to interview them and learn about savages?
I don't even know, man. Like, I feel like there's specifically a quote. I can't remember who says it, but maybe it's John that says, like, this was obviously not going to work out well. Someone definitely alludes to that.
Okay, yeah. And this goes back to what I was saying, where the Native American guy who is part of Dutch's gang is like, what do we have left, basically? Like, you have robbed us of our history, our culture, our people, mm-hmm. our land. Like, and it's basically like, can you blame this guy? And it's sad. And of course, shooting Nastas is the worst. I don't like that. He's the first character that, like, I like in recent time in this game.
Yeah.
And he just gets his head.
He immediately dies. Dies within two missions.
And of course, McDougal is like unfazed by this. He's like, oh, that was the worst experience of my life. I feel so tired. Like,
yeah. Really? He's like, I want to go home.
And I think it's something funny. That's funny that John says, is like, unfortunately, that was not the worst experience of my life, which is funny. But yeah, so that's where we end off, Brevin. What is there to say? Like, I'm happy to be back in Blackwater. It feels different. The vibe is different.
It's nice. It's nice to be there.
I like that we're interacting with the agents again because we feel closer to the actual original mission.
Yes.
And I think we're going to get there because, spoilers if you aren't aware, but we are very close to the end of the game.
Yeah, we have about like 15 missions.
I think we have 14. Like two main episodes left to talk about Red Dead 1. And then maybe one summarization thing, but yeah.
I can't believe how quickly this game... How many episodes were spent in Mexico? Like four? half the show was spent in Mexico?
It's a weird distribution, isn't it? Like, I guess it's not that weird. It's probably like three, right?
Yeah, then it's about even then. Three in oh my god, what's it called? New Austin. Three in Mexico, three in Blackwater, essentially. Yeah.
So it makes sense, but
it, man, that was a long three episodes.
That was a long, well, we did take a break too, to be fair.
We did, yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I am happy to be out of the Mexico portion, and next time, what are we playing against, or up until?
We are playing till Old Friends, New Problems.
Old Friends, New Problems. So, we'll be back with that, and I think we might actually get a chance to confront Dutch. So
I really hope it's satisfying. If it's like all these other ones, I'm going to be so disappointed.
You actually don't remember what happens?
No, I don't.
Oh, Brevin. Sweet. Okay. All right. So we'll talk about that next time then. Write into reddeadcast@gmail.com with your interpretations. Follow at reddeadcast at Instagram. I've been doing, I've been trying to give preference to posting videos instead. I got the one about us taking a break, Brevin, was me lassoing Javier Escuela. I did see that. You did see that? And it like turned in midair. Super funny. But this last one I was like me throwing dynamite at a bunch of bandits on top of a mountain, and it blew them up, but like far enough behind them that it just knocked them over like a bunch of bowling pins. So it was very satisfying to watch. Anything else to talk about? And did you do any miscellaneous stuff?
No.
Okay. I did. So I got my final treasure map or treasure location.
You got the final, like, you've had all the maps?
10 out of 10, man.
Oh my god.
And it gave me up more space in my satchel. I don't know if I need it, but
that's cool. I was gonna say, I don't think I've ever come close to hitting a limit, and I've killed a decent amount of animals. I've never
seen. No, it's not anything like that. It's like how many of an individual item can you have? Like how many medicine can you have?
Yeah.
So yeah, and I got a bounty. So I, you know how I bought the war horse and I was like, this is fine because it's the last thing I'll buy. Yeah. Apparently I can buy the explosive rifle for $5,000, and now I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't have gotten the war horse, because
war horse is cooler. You don't need explosions.
But you do need explosions.
I guess you need it because you're on difficulty on the
hard. Well, difficulty. No, I don't. No, you're right. I don't need it. But there's specific challenges associated with it. I think it might be specific to the definitive edition or something. Because I don't know. It seems like something that they would add like post launch, like a $5,000 gun and its own set of challenges. So I'm curious to. I want to get it to. To see it, but I actually Googled. What are you gonna say? You seem like you want to say something.
Yeah. Is it like a sniper rifle or is it like a repeater? If it's a repeater, that's crazy.
No, I think it's more like a sniper rifle.
Okay. I didn't know if it was like GTA style ridiculousness where it's like quick firing like explosive gun.
like the helicopter machine gun. No, I don't think so. It might be single shot. I guess it would. I don't know. But anyway, so I Googled like best ways to make money in Red Dead, and I got some tips for it. Because I originally thought I could just like cheese the poker AI and just play high stakes poker for a long time, and I lost like $500 or something. Like I don't even know what I lost, but enough where I was like, this is not going to. I mean, you probably actually can do it if you have more patience, but
yep.
I kept trying to like. Really push hard on bad hands and they will call you on and just be like, no, you don't have anything, and often they'll have something better. Or what really makes me mad is they will just totally fold if they don't have a good hand. And if you do have a good one, so if you have like pocket queens or something, you're like, oh yeah, I can finally do this, and you go up, they'll be like, fold. It's like, okay, I made 60 chips, awesome.
I mean, essentially though, that's a good thing. That's realistic.
I know, but I want to be better. It's not video game. Yeah. But apparently, and I actually learned this sort of organically before even looking it up, is if you get bear pelts and bear parts and then sell them in Mexico, you can just make tons of money. Like, actually, like $120 a bear. Like, it's crazy.
Are they just worth a lot over there because it's not native?
Yes.
That's cool. I didn't even know that. It was a
thing. Oh, yeah. No, they have that. So if you get, like, plants from Mexico and sell them in Blackwater, it's worth more because they're less, you know...
common
thank you
Less populous.
Yes, the population of cacti. No, not cacti. Wait, no, there is no cacti in Blackwater. I keep forgetting that it's not...
It's essentially the Red Dead 2 location.
No, it is.
Basically, yeah. What it is, yeah.
All right, Brevin, I am like actually drenched in sweat.
Me too.
What is it? 82 degrees.
It's got to be like 85 in my room right now. It's not as bad as last week. Last week was much worse because it was warmer here. But I'm ready to eat something, go to sleep, and turn on my AC. Not in that order, but.
All right, Brevin. Thank you so much for listening.
You're welcome. You're welcome for me listening to you.
And thank you for talking when I stopped talking, so that we could have a podcast.
Yep, that's what I do. That's what I'm here for.
Thank you, everyone who is listening, for listening and for writing in. If you want to be read on the show or have me reply to your email, whatever, reddeadcast@gmail.com. We already said the Instagram. We already did the stuff. See you guys later. Play up to old friends and new problems. And this has been Red Dead Reflection.
Adios, folks.
Adios. Adios, Mexico.
All right.